the Mike Tech Show, show number 356. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for future show topics. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow. You can send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. I have a full show, great show lined up, where I'm going to talk about a couple items from consulting this week that I want to share with you. One of them's an interesting tip that I learned. And with that, I also have some great email responses to the last couple shows, and then some great tips and tricks with email that I'm going to get to. Before we get started, I want to thank GoToMeeting for sponsoring the Mike Tech Show. Online meetings are a great tool for businesses to work smarter. And to work smarter, I highly recommend that you use GoToMeeting at GoToMeeting.com. You can easily set up meetings with just one click. They have an incredible tool set for you to organize and do a tremendous presentation. You can easily hand off to different presenters in case you have multiple people that need to present. This is a great way to save money by having unlimited meetings for one flat rate, and you save on the time, travel, tolls, parking. This is the way to hold a meeting. And you can test it out free for 30 days, but you have to go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter the code podcast. For 30 free days, you can try this out. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and enter podcast for the promo code. The last few weeks, I've been talking about the problems that I've had with a client with IE8. I went over the solutions for the networking problem and some other issues, and your responses have been phenomenal. But now I want to follow up with the IE8 issue. On Tuesday, I went to my client and I spent 4 hours working on his computer. If you sent me an email with any recommendation, and I received quite a bit, including many that I didn't even cover on shows, I tried every single suggestion. If you emailed me, I tried the suggestion. So no matter how, I'm not going to say ridiculous, but no matter what the suggestion was, every single utility that was recommended, every fix, trying different profiles. I'm not even going to get into, I tried everything and we still have the problem. There was one thing that I was reluctant to do, and that was to reapply Service Pack 3 to the system, to XP. Now, I even uninstalled IE8 and put IE7 on, and we still had the problem. Depending on what site you go to, if there's like buttons or links to press, you press them and nothing happens. Even Microsoft site, when you go to microsoft.com/fixit, and there's different buttons that you can pick what problem you want, can't click on it. Firefox works fine. Safari works fine. Chrome works. We even go to a different computer in the office, and it works great with IE8. I've done everything. The only thing left to do is reformat the system. My client's reluctant to do that, but he may do that. Now, I offered up these 4 hours. I charged him nothing because he's a good client. We go back a long way, and I wanted to do everything humanly possible to try to fix it. We can't use IE9 because it's XP, and IE9 does not work on XP. The problem now is we just got to redo the system, but he's actually considering going to he needs a new computer, and he's going to be going to Windows 7, so that certainly will eliminate the problem. I just didn't want to be stopped. There's a problem. I wanted to solve it. I wanted to see it through. Everybody had incredible suggestions. I thank everybody for your feedback. Now, Barb in the chat did not know that IE9 does not work with XP. It only works with Vista and Windows 7. And you're probably going to learn this. IE10 was announced, and it will not work with Vista. It will only work with Windows 7. Microsoft is finally building in to some of their applications. They want to make it where you will not be able to hang on and continue with XP and Vista. They want you to transition, move on to Windows 7. I concur. I completely agree with that. I have no problem with them not holding back features to be backwardly compatible. XP came out in 2002. You're looking at an operating system that is almost 10 years old. It is time to move on. If it works and it's not broke and it's running fine for you for what you need to do, that's great. But don't ask for some of the newer, faster, better software to run. Like, oh man, I want IE10. Sorry, you're going to need a new system. That's just, that's the way it is. You can't penalize moving forward in technology to try to hold to be backwardly compatible. So I got no problem with what Microsoft did here. And it's their way of pushing you into the modern, newer operating system. A client needs dual monitors at his desk and also the ability to present on a large 55-inch LCD that's hung on the wall and needs to present to clients information on a table that is set up in front of that TV. And he needs all of these to be connected to a small footprint computer that's running Windows 7 Professional 64-bit with lots of memory and a large hard drive. I have provided him, and it's still sitting in the box where I've purchased it, configured it, and got it working, a Dell Optiplex 780, loaded up with memory, the hard drive. It came with a dual video card in the PCI Express slot. Now, in this box, there is only one other slot open, and it's a regular PCI slot. So we have the PCI Express with the dual video, and then we have a PCI. So I said, no problem. I will get a PCI video card from Dell. I'll pop it in, and it's got to have the low profile card, so it's a very short card. Pop it in, go to MonoPrice, buy a DVI to HDMI adapter, and I'll run the HDMI cable to the TV, a dual DVI, because I'm providing dual Samsung DVI monitors, no problem. The built-in PCI Express card is a Radeon Vision Tech, so it's the ATI chipset. It is the 4350. So we have the Radeon 4350, which has dual DVI cable that comes out that will support two windows. It's Windows 7 Professional 64-bit. I bought the Vision Tech Professional product, which is the 3450 PCI for a small form factor computer. When I popped in the PCI card, which went in very easy, I hooked the adapter, and here's the tip. When I booted the system, and I had the dual displays here in my office, and I was running it to the TV that I have here with the HDMI cable, the system booted to the wrong video card. It booted to the TV. It wasn't booting to one of my regular monitors. I wondered what was going on. I couldn't flip it over at all. I couldn't even get the other video card to work. So I said, let me go into the BIOS and see what the BIOS says. And this is the tip. Even though the PCI Express card is not on board, there is an option for video to go auto, or for your primary adapter to auto detect, or to select the onboard video as the primary. And then there's a thing that the onboard video will, if you select this, the PCI Express will be used as the primary adapter if it's inserted. I looked at this and it was the answer. So now, once I made that change in the BIOS and saved it, we booted perfectly to the dual video card that was the PCI Express. So the tip is, if you have two video cards in a system and it's not booting to the right card and you can't control it within Windows, take a look at the BIOS and make the change there, and especially with the Dell. So that worked out perfectly. I now had three monitors working, so when I set this up in the office, it's going to work phenomenally. We even have a wireless keyboard and mouse. So when he's working and sitting at his desk with the dual monitors, when he needs to work with a client, he can pick up the keyboard and mouse, walk over to the table that's in front of the big screen. He just turns that on. It'll come right up, and he can drag his presentation and what he's going to be talking about with his clients right over to the 55-inch Samsung that's mounted on the wall. Again, I love Samsung for the LCDs, so he purchased from me two 20-inch Samsungs that will be behind him on his credenza. It's going to look perfect. We have a cabler that ran the HDMI from behind the TV, so you won't even see that cable. It's going to run all the way behind in the wall and mount to a jack that cannot be seen by anybody, that I will have a short HDMI cable that will go from the computer to the jack. It is coming out perfectly. Yes, there's some real money being spent on this, but it's a new office. If you remember the stories from a couple months ago with the clients that were moving, this is, we'll say, the president of the company who moved, and it was his office, and we're finally getting around to decorating and designing his office. And I was so glad that he came to me to help design the office. I did not know that my client is opening up another office. It's actually an hour and a half drive from here. And Wednesday, I'm going to scout out the second office and do a walkthrough and come up with recommendations for technology throughout a second office location. And here's what it shows. If you give some thought, come up with a good design, make good recommendations, look what will happen. You will definitely get more leads, more referrals, more clients, more work from your existing clients if you take care of them, come up with creative solutions. And that's what it's all about. And I was really glad and I'm excited about getting this all set up for him. I can't wait. Let's get to some email. I have to share this. This is from Rob. Saturday of last week, I was catching up on your podcast and was listening to podcast 354. You started talking about your problems with .NET framework and all the feedback you had gotten from your listeners. I perked up immediately. Just the day before, I had a business client with a .NET framework problem. The computer is an older Dell desktop running XP and would not update anything having to do with .NET framework. I sat there for 2 hours searching on Google and trying the various fixes I came across. Nothing worked. I told the customer that I had some homework to do and would be back Tuesday. The computer was running fine otherwise, so the customer had no problem with that. When I heard you mention your problem and all of the wonderful solutions you had gotten, I ran to my computer and checked your show notes, which are fantastic, by the way. I was ready for Tuesday. I went in the morning and solved their problem in just a few minutes. The .NET framework cleanup tool is what solved it for me. I ran Windows Update afterwards, and it upgraded to .NET version 4 and patched everything. I had a happy customer, and I am relieved and happy as well. I owe it all to you and to the good folks that offered up the suggestions. Thanks to everyone. You now have all of my Amazon traffic. Thanks so much for what you do. I really appreciate it. Rob, thank you for that feedback, and it's great. It just makes me feel so good about what we're doing here and what I'm doing with the show. But thank you to two people who have clients and shared that utility, and that's Jorge and Kate. Both recommended that same utility. Thanks to you guys for coming through and then sharing it. It's perfect, and that's what this is all about. This is from Trevor, and he says, "Hi, Mike. With regards to the chap who sent you an email about his son that was a victim of cyberbullying, do you think the hacker who is hacking his account is just sniffing the network as the guy's son is logging on? That is very possible because they were using wireless that might have been unsecured. Maybe his son should make sure he accesses the sites he uses with HTTPS rather than HTTP so that logon info is not sent over the network in plain text. Just a thought. Thanks for the show, Trevor from the UK. Great idea, and it's very easy in your settings for Facebook, as an example, to set that to HTTPS. Also, in Google for Gmail, you can default and have all of your sessions be HTTPS, which is secure HTTP for your traffic. There have been a lot of emails, and I think I covered one about installing Service Pack 1 for Windows 7. And I actually talked about this with Carrie on Computer America. I had problems with trying to install Service Pack 1, and I shared my stories with you from past shows. I received the following info. Microsoft released two patches to fix problems with Windows 7's infamous first service pack. Both should be installed before updating to Windows 7 Service Pack 1. Because you get this error, C with 5034 applying update operation 282 of 118,547. I had a system crash with that very error, and it frustrated me. There was no way to fix this, and it's a terrible problem, and it's terrible for Microsoft to release a service pack that would cause a system to crash and crash so bad that I had to redo the system. Now, I was lucky there was no data on it, but I had to totally redo the system. I spent hours and hours and hours trying to fix it, and there is no fix for this. When you get that error, game over. You're redoing your system. So, Microsoft finally releases these two patches. Now, it's Knowledge Base Article 2534366 and 2533552. I will have links to those knowledge base fixes in the show notes. It is very important that you apply those before you install Service Pack 1. Now, I know many of you, including myself, have had successful installs of Service Pack 1 without having the error. But why take the chance? If you haven't applied Service Pack 1, this is one of the benefits of listening to this show. There are two patches that you have to apply before you apply Service Pack 1. This question is from Jerry, who is a listener and will say listener slash client who I've helped. And I've helped him with the server he's going to be migrating. And he sent this question and said, it's for the show. I was ordering a desktop replacement and found a great deal on a Dell for a PowerEdge server at a tremendous discount. Now that I've received it, I'm considering switching it to use as our main server instead. I'm sure I can't just transfer the hard drive from the old server to the new server, but what's the best way to perform the transfer? The old server has a retail version of the Windows Server 2003, not OEM installed, but the server is probably 5 years old. If you want to discuss it, what options would there be to set up the new server as a virtualization server and transfer the old server's data as a VM? There's a lot of things, and I ask the following questions. Is the old server a domain controller? Is the old server hosting Exchange Server? And there are a couple solutions possibly here. DG in the chat mentions Shadow Protect. Shadow Protect actually could work, but for a server, it's $1,000 for the license. Not that that's horrible here, but it's definitely very expensive. There is an easier answer here. And since it is not a domain controller, it's not an email server. Here's the suggestion, Jerry. Set up the new server as another work group server on the existing domain. And there's only one application really running on this other server. I have some inside info here. He wants to upgrade that application anyway. Go through the process on the new server. Install the latest version of the application. Migrate the data over, and that's a piece of cake. And just keep it running as a brand new server and then go format or redo the other one. If it was a domain controller, I would have suggested setting this up as a secondary domain controller, transfer the FISMO roles. Now it's getting real geeky in here. After you transfer the FISMO roles, then you let everything replicate. Now you do the data migration, piece of cake. If it's Exchange, I would have added, as long as it's not an SBS server, that is correct. No, actually, SBS, they allow you, and I went through this, if you are upgrading, you are allowed to have two SBS servers on the same network, I believe, for 60 days using the SBS migration. And I've done that with a client and talked about that last September. Since this is not Small Business Server, there are articles, and I've actually talked about this in past shows, for a process to demote a domain controller and to remove it from the domain, there is a specific process which you must follow. If it's email, you would just add this as a secondary email server, migrate all the mailbox servers from one server to the other, and then you would follow the Microsoft instructions on how to remove an Exchange server. And there's very detailed information that you can use to follow the steps that are very searchable in the TechNet website of Microsoft. Jerry, I think you really got it easy. Just install the new app, set this up as another standalone Windows 2003 server, install the new app on it, the latest version, migrate the data, you're good to go. You're not going to have a problem. This is from Cameron, and I actually covered this on Computer America a while ago, but I want to mention this on the Mike Tech Show because it's important. Plus, Cameron might not have heard this. Hey, Mike, could I get some advice from you on a server problem that I'm having? I need to transfer large files between our two offices. Both offices have their own servers running Windows Server 2003. Would you use Windows Server 03 FTP or FileZilla to transfer the files? I love FileZilla. It needs to be simple to use as the staff, they're not very computer savvy. I was planning to put a share folder on both servers. Am I on the right track with this, or can you offer a simpler solution? Any suggestions would be appreciated, as you're the man on servers. I hope I have given you enough information on my problem. Also, learn a lot from your show. Oh, I forgot to mention, I have very limited experience with servers. Thanks, Cameron. FileZilla is a great FTP client, but a lot of people don't know there is the companion server product, FileZilla Server. What I would want you to do, Cameron, is on the server that the files need to be transferred to, set up FileZilla Server. It's easy to assign permissions and then set up a directory where the person who logs in, those files will automatically go to the directory that you've given them permissions. There's tutorials on the site on how to set this up and do it. And then what you do is you put FileZilla Server on the one server, FileZilla Client on the other, and you have them FTP to the server. And someone asked, does it support SFTP? I believe FileZilla does. So you can do a secure file transfer. That's it. It is not that hard. There are great tutorials on FileZilla's site that will help you through the process of setting up the server. And then also, the client is a piece of cake to use. I use FileZilla every week in the post-production of the Mike Tech Show. This is how I get my audio file that you listen to this show and how I transfer it to Libsyn, which is the hosting company. I use FileZilla all the time, and I could not recommend anything better. And there are a lot of free FTP clients out there, and I've used them in the past. FileZilla just kicks their butt. That is it for the email for tonight. Please take a moment, and if you're buying anything from Amazon, go to miketechshow.com, scroll down on the left-hand side of the website. There's an Amazon link, and also in the show notes, the last link of every show is a link to go to Amazon. Click on that, go purchase, go anywhere you want on Amazon, and it doesn't have to be technology related. You can buy anything as long as Amazon's selling it and as long as it's in the USA. I have learned that it's impossible for me to get any commissions if you're outside the United States. I wish I could, but go buy anything and I will get a commission. Your price remains the same, so why not use my link and you help support the show? And it's a way of giving back and helping me. I really appreciate it. In that spirit of giving back, and it came up in the middle when I started the show tonight, it made me think of this, where someone recognized Rob Koslow's piano music, which I use for the intro and outro of every one of my shows. And occasionally I like to have music to play from Rob Koslow, who is just an incredible pianist, the best piano player that I've ever heard. And tonight I am going to play Summer Garden, which is from Rob's CD, Sophomore Jinx, and very appropriate with the summertime upon us. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up. beautiful piano music was provided by Rob Coslow, and the song Summer Garden, and that is from his CD Sophomore Jinx, and there's lots more of that music to be found at robcoslow.com. Go buy his music. You will never regret it. I love his music, and there's many times that I'm in that mood to just want to hear great piano music. He's the man, and I thank him so much for not only the great music, but the permission that I have to use some of his songs as my intro and outro. Just fantastic. All right. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and I encourage you to visit miketechshow.com and to look at the show notes and check out some of the great links that I've talked about tonight, especially the Service Pack 1. They are two important patches that you have to apply. Spread the word on that. That's very important. And I thank you so very much for supporting the show and staying subscribed. That's it. I'll talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.